Hey guys, episode 31. Yay! Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners. And tonight we're talking about Johnny Depp. And my name is Jen. And I've got
Carrie
on the phone. So it'll be me and Carrie bringing it to you tonight. We're going to do the best we can. We're still working bugs out and still kind of coming up with a different style, would you say?
I was kind of hoping my style was already cool, but, you know.
Well, your style is fine. I meant the podcast style.
Nah, I messed around.
Always. Oh, okay, first and foremost, guys, hooray, 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 we did good. We want to send a shout out to Barry, my other co-host that is no longer with us. He still loves us, he still loves the podcast, and he has donated the time for us to stream our podcast for at least the next several months. So, Barry, thank you. We love you. Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners, there's you a t-shirt, man.
Yes.
Soon as I get them made, I'm telling you. But yeah, we definitely wanted to say thank you and give him a big shout out because even though he's no longer with us, he is still helping us out every way he can. So thank you so much and we definitely appreciate it.
Right. Right on.
All right. Now, we're doing Johnny Depp this week, but before we get into that, let's go over just a few things. Number one, the trial. Have you got anything to say about the trial?
You know, since Heard ended up essentially firing all of her people, it kind of deflated it for her, obviously, and for me, it kind of deflated the whole show. At this point now, I'm just ready to get, you know, the verdict.
Because we all know what it's going to be. I'm telling you, I swear to God, I will go on record.
Yeah.
If Johnny Depp loses this case, somebody got fucking paid. That is all I am saying, because they have proven over and over and over again that Amber Heard is a liar, that she is a user, that she does things like this just to piss people off and just to get under their skin. So, yeah, if Johnny Depp loses this case, somebody got paid.
Yes.
There you go, and I have no problem stating that for the record. Y'all come after me if you want to. Hey, Tommy. Everybody say hey to Tommy.
Hola. I don't even speak Spanish. Hola.
Carrie, say hey to Tommy.
Hola, Tommy.
Hola.
Guys, this is my roommate, Tommy. He is attempting dinner.
I decided not to attempt that today.
Ah, excellent.
Let me put these up. Come on.
Those look really good. Tommy is a great cook, and he's doing ribs.
Tomorrow.
So.
Beef ribs.
Y'all can be jealous.
I make awesome barbecue.
All right, Tommy. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
Okay, guys. Sorry about that.
Don't get let on you.
Don't do anything I would do. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Name it after me if you do.
Ha ha. Not a chance.
Full credit.
All right. Sorry about that once again. So, back to what we were discussing. Now, along with the trial, I have brought up the fact that abused men are much more common than you would assume. You probably know one or two. Honestly, you probably do. Women have gotten away with hitting, punching, kicking, slapping, lying about men for so long that some do it with impunity now, and it's a really, really, really devastating thing for a guy to have to try to tell someone that he has been abused by his wife or girlfriend or old lady or whatever you want to call her, especially when he's a lot bigger than her and everybody's looking at him like he's lost his mind. So, a few things I do want to point out, and I hope you guys will be aware of this. Law enforcement needs to be aware of this, too. So if you know law enforcement, shake them up. Make sure they understand. Abused men have zero, none, nada help as far as safe spaces or, you know, things like that. Counselors that the police provide for women who are abused. Men don't have this option. This is not, they don't have anything like that for men. The safe spaces, there is nothing like that for men. And to top all of that off, you know how bad it feels? Screams rape or abuse and is ignored or laughed at. Imagine that times 50 and there you go. Because men who claim abuse, the fact that they were abused, are laughed at, they're disregarded, their claims are ignored, and even if the woman throws abuse allegations at them, such as Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, even if he is proven to be in the right and she is proven to have filed false charges, nothing is ever done to her. Nothing is ever done, nothing is ever filed, no criminal complaints, no nothing. Far as I'm concerned, these bitches who file false police reports, who claim rape or abuse when there is none, ought to be brought up on criminal charges. These allegations can ruin someone's life. Revenge tactic. It is not a get back at you thing. This will ruin someone. It is not funny. I have a very, very good friend that is still, after 3 years, 4 years, dealing with the aftermath of not being believed. After, you know, after he got tired of being kicked and punched and beaten and hit with various objects. Yeah. It's not a joke, people. It's not a game. Don't play. Now, a couple of other things dealing with children. I don't know about the rest of the world. The state of Georgia, the federal government pays the entity of DFACS a certain sum for each child placed in foster care. Now, this is not the money that the child draws as a foster child. Well, that the parents get, foster parents get as a, you know, having a foster. Automatic trickle down. It goes to the company, the region, the city, and then trickles down so that some of that money actually goes into the caseworker's pocket. What that is saying is that your caseworkers in the state of Georgia, your DFACS caseworkers that are supposed to be children first, yeah, some of them may not be. It may be money first. And they may be separating families just for the God Almighty dollar. Just keep it in mind. And number two, again, with the men asking for help when they have been abused. Guys, I hate to tell you this, and I really hate to say this, but it's be ready for a hostile environment when you tell them what's going on, because they will not believe you, and they will try to cause you trouble. It's just the way it goes. You know, oh my God, no. There's no way he got beat up by that little bitty girl. Yeah, I've seen those little bitty girls fight, and they could take on Andre the Giant and win. So, yeah, don't judge a book. So, I've got my preaching out of the way. Carrie, do you have anything to add to this as far as custody or abuse or anything like that?
You've definitely encapsulated it.
All right. Excellent. Okay. So, now that we got the serious stuff out of the way, on with the show. So, what are we doing tonight, Carrie?
So, we're talking about Was it 2005, I believe?
Yes, it was.
For Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Nicely done.
Yes, 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 yes.
And it was directed by?
Tim Burton.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I had another friend wander in here. All right, on with the show. So, Faye, I love you, baby. But Faye's my daughter, by the way, just in case you guys didn't know. So, here we go. Willy Wonka and the, or I'm sorry, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
Number one, this is not a remake.
No.
This is not a remake. The man who wrote the screenplay did so without ever watching the original 1971 Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder. He never saw
right.
it. He didn't watch it until after he had gotten done with the screenplay and was absolutely astounded at how dark it was.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and listen, for me personally, the original starring Gene Wilder was a beloved film. I absolutely loved Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Indeed.
But it wasn't, it, you know, it strayed from the source material.
Yes, it did. And that
yeah,
is,
deal.
Absolutely, that is the one thing that Tim Burton was hoping to correct. This is
right.
not a remake. This is another interpretation of the original book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got, we know it was directed by Tim Burton. It was 2005. We've got Freddie Highmore as Charlie Bucket, Philip Weingratz as Augustus Gloop, Julia Winter as Veruca Salt, Anna Sophia Robb as Violet Beauregard, Mike TV was Jordan Fry, Mrs. Bucket was Helena Bonham Carter, the one and only, Mr. Bucket was Noah Taylor. He's been in several different items as well. Grandpa Joe was an unknown by the name of David Kelly. And, of course, Dr. Wonka was Christopher Lee.
Right.
Yeah. Now, this is the second movie that Christopher Lee has worked with Johnny Depp on. Do you know the first? It's one of your favorites. You should remember this.
Was it Ed Wood?
No, it was not. It was Sleepy Hollow. Christopher Lee
yeah.
played the magistrate.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, yeah, this is the second one.
Which, honestly, if we're kind of ranking Tim Burton films, I preferred Sleepy Hollow over Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Well, I think most everybody who's a Johnny Depp fan did, simply because he looks so much better.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to kind of get Gene Wilder out of your head.
It
you know?
Really is, most definitely.
I mean, he was so very charming. He's, to me, he, you know,
he
maybe
is Willy Wonka.
Lead and fear film, but, you know, Gene Wilder, hard top.
Absolutely, you're 100% correct on that one. Okay, take a guess at what the budget was for this movie. And I'll give you a hint. It was above $100 million.
Lots of practical effects. Not a whole lot of CGI. If I know...
Correct.
A lot of Burton. I'm going to go with... Oh, those were extravagant sets. I'm going to go with $185 million and do a Price is Right on this.
Very close, but you're over. It's $150 million is the budget. Now, it actually pulled in $475 million at the box office. So, definitely a hit. Definitely a big hit. And, once again, this is one of those... Johnny Depp seems to hit it where the audience and the critics are eye-to-eye. Doesn't happen very often, but it happens more often with Johnny Depp movies than any other actor that I've ever seen. Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 83%. Common Sense gave it a 4 out of 5 stars. And IMDb gave it a 6.7 out of 10.
That feels right to me.
So, and this was Johnny Depp's 33rd movie. And this was in 2005. He's got to be well over 50 movies by now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sure.
I mean, I'll have to do the count and see what it's up to now. But, yeah, it's got to be well over 50. So, yeah, Johnny Depp's 33rd movie. And everybody might recognize the name Freddie Highmore. He played opposite Johnny Depp in another movie as well, which is how he landed this one.
Yeah, that was definitely Finding Neverland.
Absolutely. He played Peter in Finding Neverland.
He's amazing.
He is an amazing actor and has been apparently since the day he could walk. So, that's Diesel Dog. Everybody say hey to Diesel. Hi, Diesel. He's fine. He's fine. The cat gets up to way more antics than the dog. You all right?
Yeah. All right, it's cold. Hold on.
It's dinner time, guys. Sorry about that.
Come on.
For as big as this dog is, and he's a 110-pound pit bull, he eats the little tiny chunk food, and you have to soak it underwater before he'll eat it. So, yeah, he's a brat. But anyway, apologize for the interruption.
For the animals. Yeah. The other animals.
All of them. Okay, so Freddie Highmore did play opposite Johnny Depp in Finding Neverland. He also went on to do some outstanding performances in other movies as well. But yeah, Johnny Depp was definitely the driving force in getting him the role of Charlie.
Yeah.
In this movie, they did not even audition for the role of Charlie. Johnny went to Tim and said, "I know this kid, he's amazing. You know, he's great, he's a great actor, he works on cue, he has no problems with this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, check him out." And there you go. That's all it took.
Yeah. He was awesome as Norman Bates in Big Motel. That's where, you know, he was just kind of like that cute kid in Finding Neverland and, you know, Charlie and Chuck. Yeah, great, great. Bates Motel?
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Freddie Highmore, he's definitely a super talent.
Speaking of that movie, now when Mike TV is transported through the TVs, there's a scene from the 1960s Psycho is reenacted in that scene in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And as you said, Freddie Highmore played Norman Bates in 2013's Bates Motel.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of like 6 degrees of separation in this. They use a lot of other 2001 Space Odyssey is one that they give a nod to. Edward Scissorhands is another. But yeah, they definitely give a nod to various different movies as you're going through this particular film. Now, do you remember the Oompa Loompas in the original? In the Gene Wilder version?
That's right. Yes.
Okay. Well, the Oompa Loompas were reduced to one.
Yeah, the amazing Deep Ray.
Deep Roy. Deep Roy.
Oh, Roy, pardon me. Yes. That guy.
Yep. He did all of the Oompa Loompas, and instead of like capturing his image and then duplicating it, moving, you know, a little bit here. No, he went to one position, did all the movements, went to another position, did all the movements, went to a third position. He repeated himself dozens of times to avoid having to use the CGI to replicate himself. And in doing so, he actually boosted his pay up to $1 million for the movie. He was absolutely amazing.
He was the stand-in for Yoda.
Yes.
Back in the day when they did The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, when Yoda was actually a dude in costume.
Yeah, right. You know, and yeah, he was uncredited.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That would tend to piss me off, too.
Well, you know, they had Frank Oz and basically, you know, a Muppet, if you will.
Right.
You know, Jim Henson had done Yoda, but when they needed, like, a live stand-in, they used Deep Roy.
Awesome.
Jedi Master Yoda.
That is definitely something to note down. He is an amazing guy. And the thing is, he told them when they hired him for this role that he could not sing nor could he dance. So he learned how to dance. You know, he actually spent many, many hours practicing with a choreographer to learn the dance moves for the different scenes. However, not a whole lot you can do when you cannot carry a tune in a bucket.
Right. No. Yeah.
So instead of having him sing, take a guess who did the vocals for the Oompa Loompa songs in this movie.
Like vocals or singing vocals?
Yeah, vocals. The singing vocals. Hint. The actual music composition was done by Danny Elfman.
Yeah. Oh, so Elfman?
Absolutely. Danny Elfman is who you hear singing in the Oompa Loompa songs. But, you know, he was the lead singer of Oingo Boingo.
Well, yeah. Like I said, you know, I'm 51 years old. I was super familiar with Oingo Boingo.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
oh, God.
You know, and Elfman had done, you know, and Oingo Boingo, pardon me, not Elfman, Oingo Boingo, you know, they did Weird Science.
Right.
You know, the song. Yeah, you know, Elfman's just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, all of these names that we've been throwing around the past 5 minutes, you know, Tim Burton, you know, I appreciate Depp in a way, and I love him. In this movie, again, we're talking about him, but Tim Burton really loves bringing the talent and, you know, like bringing talented people into his projects.
And he is very, very good at picking the talent. Danny Elfman.
He's close with these people.
Oh, yeah.
He really, yeah, with you know, with Deep, he insisted that Deep play these Oompa Loompas, and you're right.
Right,
you know, he didn't know how to sing or dance, but
Tim said, we'll fix it.
Deep Roy.
Tim said, we'll fix it.
Deep.
Yep. Because he knew he could count on him. Same thing with Johnny, same thing with Danny, same thing with Helena.
Yep.
You know, he knows how to pick the talent, and he's very, very good at bringing together a group of people that will work well with each other, and will bounce off of each other and, you know, make it look real, which is the basic goal of any movie is it's to make you believe it. You've got to escape for a little while, and the best thing to do is zone right on into that movie and forget the rest of the world exists.
Yeah, and you know, it's almost kind of like the Brat Pack. You know, we remember the Brat Pack from the 80s and 90s. He's kind of got his own Brat Pack, where there are people that collaborate well together, and then you have these superstars that want to collaborate with your kind of close group of friends.
Right.
And that's just testament to, you know, Tim Burton having an amazing reputation. You know, people definitely want to work with Tim Burton, but his core group, you've got to conform to my core group first.
Yep. And that's the way it is. I mean, when they did Edward Scissorhands, that was Burton and Depp's first movie together. That music, that composition was supposed to go to Robert Smythe of The Cure. However, he took one look at it, had no idea who these people were, didn't know who Tim Burton was, because he was not well known at the time, didn't know who Johnny Depp was, didn't know what the hell Edward Scissorhands was, and was just like, hey, I'll look at it when I get the chance, and never looked at it. So the music for that went to Danny Elfman. Hence, that's how he was brought into Burton's flock.
Wow.
Yeah.
What an interesting alternate reality that would be, right?
Oh, man, I don't even want to think about it. No multiverses today. I can't handle it. All right. Now, there are many fake chocolate bars in this movie. There has to be. But there were quite a few actual real chocolate bars that you actually see as they're unwrapping them and this and that. Take a guess at how many real chocolate bars were provided by Nestle for this movie.
Wow. Well, first of all, I didn't know that Nestle was providing.
Oh, yeah. Willy Wonka is a Nestle subsidiary.
Okay. Yeah, right. You know, I'm going to go with, and I mean, there's no telling how they use these, but I'm going to go with 3,500 bars.
You know, you almost got it doubled. 1,850.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yep.
Wow.
That was just the real chocolate bars. Now, for the fake ones, hang on.
Well, so fake chocolate bars.
It's actually plastic.
Oh, so like prop?
Yeah, prop.
What? So is that cheaper?
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. Wow, you're like, yeah, in bulk, yeah. You know what, in bulk, I bet you're right.
Okay, 110,000 plastic chocolate bars were wrapped in Nestle paper and returned to the set.
Well, you know what? They never expire. So
absolutely.
That makes sense, too.
And on that same note, you said you didn't realize that Nestle was the one, you know, kind of in with this.
You know, I said the Willy Wonka brand.
Right.
And you know, I did not know that that was Nestle.
Yes, it's a Nestle subsidiary. See, yeah, I was screwed up. I thought it was Hershey. But it's not. And here's an interesting thing. You know the huge bar of chocolate they bring in the TV room?
Sure.
Okay, they flip it at one point and you can see the UPC symbol.
Oh. All right, come on.
I'm serious. Really? The number on the UPC is 034-000-190-003, which is the actual UPC for a 7-ounce Hershey chocolate bar. Kind of a kick in the ass to Hershey.
Your research is from beyond. That's amazing. Yeah, that's definitely kind of a finger. That blows my mind.
Yep. Definitely. Oh, here's another little tidbit. There were two actors that were offered the role of Grandpa Joe that both died before filming began. Now, they're not the only two that were offered the role, but there are two that actually
died.
That would be Sir Peter Ustinov? And Gregory Peck.
Oh, jeez, Gregory Peck?
Yep. Yeah, he was...
How about Bill and Mockingbird, Gregory Peck?
Yes. He was offered the role, and he told them he would think about it. He really, really wanted the role, but then he passed away, and his family told Tim Burton just how happy he was to have been offered the role and just how excited he was to be playing Grandpa Joe. So, yeah, it's kind of sad.
That is sad.
Oh.
And that would have been fantastic.
Oh, man. Yeah, but the guy that got to play Grandpa Joe was perfect. He really was.
Another what if.
Right. Got to write that one down. That would be, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I can see that. Oh, and I was going to mention it when Diesel busted up in here on us. They did have trained animals. Do you remember the nutshelling room?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember Haruka getting attacked by the squirrels?
That was definitely CG though, right?
No, that was real.
What?
40 squirrels were trained from the moment of their birth. They were hand-fed by the trainers, and they were trained to do this one stunt.
Oh my God.
From the time of their birth. 40 different squirrels were trained for this. The only parts that are not the real-life squirrels are the real super close-ups of the squirrels' faces.
Yeah.
And a couple of others, but yeah, the overall scene, oh yeah, those are real squirrels.
Yeah, you know, I think I know why Tim Burton was attracted to this project, because that is such a Willy Wonka crazy thing to do. I'm going to try it from birth, and they're going to do this one scene.
And then they can go play.
Wow, that's interesting and crazy at the same time.
Absolutely. Oh, and Roald Dahl, who wrote the book, was well known for hating greedy children, spoiled children, ignorant children, and TVs.
A man after my own heart.
There you go. And do you know when they first enter and they're not sure what song is on, but in the original, it's Pure Imagination.
Yeah.
In this one, I cannot recall because I just hear Pure Imagination playing in my mind. But when they go in and everything is edible and they're eating the chocolate trees and the chocolate flowers and this and that. All of those were created by a shop called Chalky Walky Doodah, and that is in Brighton, England. They received the props back after they got done filming, and they actually sold some of these in their shop after filming was done. So anybody in England, anybody around Brighton, England, y'all go on down to Chalky Walky Doodah. And tell them that Dev Heads and Hiddlestoner sent you. And watch the look on their face like, who? But hey, you know, enough people hear about us. You know, we'll see.
I hope you'll allow me to be selfish, but I want to do a couple of items about Mr. Dahl.
Absolutely, go right ahead.
That have to do with James Bond, so... There are two connections with Roald Dahl and James Bond.
Okay.
One's easier, one's harder. But, you know, Ian Fleming,
right,
who wrote, you know, created James Bond, wrote
right,
the initial novels that we enjoy the movies from. They were part of kind of a circle of friends that included Noel Coward, Kingsley Amis. But Dahl was a screenwriter, and he wrote the screenplay, the actual screenplay that they used for You Only Live Twice.
Very nice.
Huge, huge friend of Ian Fleming. Like, they were buds.
Oh, yeah.
Subsequently, and I think very fittingly, they filmed Charlie and the Chocolate Factory at the 007 Studios at Pinewood. And I really think that was a really cool, interesting kind of full circle.
Definitely.
You know, Christopher Lee, you know, he was the villain and a close personal friend, and I think an indirect cousin of Ian Fleming's.
Right. That is definitely, that definitely goes up there on the 6 degrees of separation board.
Oh, that's a two, you know.
Right, right, right. Both of them go. Definitely. Now, just because you mentioned that about where it was filmed.
Yeah.
Now, the Let me find it. Hang on. Sorry. Give me a second. I do apologize, guys. The factory, the front of the factory, you know, where everybody gathers and where they open the gates and all that kind of good stuff. The front of the factory was constructed on the same back lot that Tim Burton used for Gotham City in Batman in 1989.
Yeah, he definitely likes using the same production people, you know, production design people.
Absolutely. And here's another tidbit. Now, you don't see Charlie's father in the first film.
Right.
But he is very present in the book. So, in this movie, he works for a factory that produces Smilex toothpaste. Ever heard of Smilex before?
Is that a British brand?
No, that is the gas that the Joker used trying to kill everybody with the big balloons and Batman 1989.
And that weird grinning face.
Yes. That was Smilex. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Those little Easter eggs that he throws in.
Oh, man, there are dozens. Okay, do you remember the two little grandmas?
Yeah.
You've got Grandma Georgina and I can't remember her name either. So,
yeah.
But Liz Smith is the one who played Grandma Georgina. Now she read for both parts, and she.
Oh, Eileen Essel was Josephine.
Josephine, there you go. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Liz Smith read for both parts, and she was given the choice because she was either first come, first serve, or Tim knew her, or something, but she was given the choice of which grandmother she'd like to play. She had a part, regardless. So she read the screenplay and intentionally picked the one who got to kiss Johnny Depp.
Nice.
She said it was lovely.
Well, the other, Eileen Essel, was also in Finding Neverland. She was Mrs. Snow.
Right. Yes.
Yep, definitely pulls from his pool of talent.
Oh, definitely. And
you love that woman.
She is amazing.
Well, she didn't start acting until she was elderly. You know,
it was a way to pass the time for her.
Yeah. What a great way to spend your retirement age.
Oh, I'm telling you. If I could be 80 and kiss someone who looks like Johnny Depp, Oh, yeah. I'd feel like I was 50 again.
Yeah.
Oh, here you go. Johnny Depp has been quoted on camera during an interview stating that the way that he portrayed his character, Willy Wonka, in this film, he wanted to think and he wanted to portray maybe what President W. Bush would act like if he was stoned.
That's pretty damn perfect. Excellent.
Yep.
Wow, I can see it.
Oh, yeah. And the costume, he actually got some say in the costume design as well.
Okay.
Now, one of his best buds, one of his best music buds, is Marilyn Manson. Well,
right.
He based his appearance on the costumes that were in Marilyn Manson's The Golden Age of Grotesque. So either the cover or the inside art is what he based his attire on.
Okay, now it got dark.
Okay, you want to lighten it up? I got something for you.
Yeah. Lean on me.
All right, you know the glass elevator?
Yeah.
Tim Burton is nothing if not thorough. Each one of the buttons has a name. It's inscribed on the button. Each one. All over the compartment. Some of those names are Incompetent Fools, T-Bone Steak Jello, Secretarial Poodles, Cocoa Cats, Mechanical Clouds, Stars in Their Pies, Nice Plums, Up and Out, Fragile Eggs, Black Box of Frogs, Weird Lollipops, Mighty Jam Monitor, Creative Dog Flip, Elastic Forest, Leaky Canes, Dessert Island, Pie Cream, Spewed Vegetables, Naffy Taffy, Lickety Split Peas, Honeycombs and Brushes, Old Sneezes and Smells Department, TV Room, Whip Doodles, Chocolate Lip Rookies, Blackberry Sausages, Yankee Doodles, Orange Egg Flip, Root Beer Goggles, Pastry Room, Heart-Shaped Lungs, and Projection Room. And if you pause the movie, if you have a big enough screen or if you can enlarge it, you can see each one of these buttons is somewhere in the glass elevator.
Wow.
Yep. And the voice that Johnny Depp uses as Willy Wonka, which, you know, we can all agree is not his voice. It's about 2 octaves too high, for one thing.
Yeah. That was odd.
Oh, yeah. Well, he tried it out on Lily Rose. She liked it.
Yeah.
Yep, she liked it. So that's why he went that direction.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of reminiscent of how he did Ed Wood.
Right.
You know, it was kind of the, I dress in women's clothing. You know, it was that kind of almost sort of childlike, semi-robotic.
Right.
It was definitely signature and unusual.
Absolutely. Speaking of signature and unusual, the flashback that illustrates young Willy Wonka having to wear that huge neck and tooth brace, that is not in the book. Unfortunately, that is a reference to Tim Burton's own past.
Okay, dish. How so?
Apparently, he was forced to wear one of those.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yep. Now, in that same flashback, Dr. Wonka tells Willy that some people are allergic to chocolate, and he's just trying to get the kid to not eat candy. However, Johnny Depp, as a child, was allergic to chocolate. Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, in joke, or if you will, in life.
In house.
It was referenced. Yeah.
But yeah, I found that very interesting. But when Johnny was growing up, they called him allergic basically to everything, but I think it was more his stress levels. And I am not a doctor. I have no medical background whatsoever. However, I do know a thing or two about stress and how it can react, you know, how it can make your body react. So, yeah, you know, with everything that was going on around him and with his family and with his parents and all of it, it was probably a lot due to stress and much less due to what he was eating. But, you know, I could be wrong. I often am.
Well, you know, it seems that when Depp and Burton collaborate, Burton gives Depp a great deal of freedom when it comes to the creative process, not just like with the character portrayal, but the story.
Absolutely.
Itself. You know, they work really, really well together. Burton's probably, you know, looking to source other ideas to go with his own weird ideas, and Depp, well, try this. You know, I have to let you know that
right.
as a child, I was reluctantly, you know, it was an
allergy. Okay.
You know,
all right.
I think it was like mysteriousness.
Stop it. Oh, remember what I was telling you about the collaborations? This is the fifth in 15 years.
Right.
Fifth so, Johnny Depp, Tim Burton film.
So, listen, when was Dark Shadows the last collaboration?
Sweeney Todd. I think Sweeney Todd.
And I'm going to probably be slapped in the face by, you know,
me?
Files, but I did not know that. So when was Sweeney Todd?
All right, let me check real quick. Let's see. Oh, come on. Filmography
man,
in order.
Work together a
lot. Yeah, they have 8 movies together.
Man.
Yep.
You know, this is very reminiscent of, like, Scorsese and De Niro. You know, a lot of these, you know, actor and director dynamics where it really does seem like the director, you know, of course, you know, Tim Burton had to have Depp in, and he was in.
Right. Although he did not get his way when it came to the Addams Family TV show. Which may be why they have halted production.
Do tell.
He wanted Christina Ricci and Johnny Depp to play Morticia and Gomez. And they said absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, Johnny Depp. We're not taking it. We're not having it. Not going to happen. And last I heard, production was stopped.
Hmm. Yep, sounds like a stalemate.
Yep. All right, let me see, where are we at? Okay, Dark Shadows was 2012. Oh, crap! I think you're right, because Sweeney Todd was 2007.
And I do, you know, I suppose, actually, Dark Shadows was the last one they did. And, I mean, Tim Burton, what was Tim Burton's last?
I'm working on that.
it kind of seems like he's kind of slowed down a bit, you know. Depp has not, you know, Depp ended up basically moving on to the Disney wagon.
Okay, it's up to 9 without the Johnny Depp King of Cult that's coming out. So 10 if you count King of Cult. However, they are mistaken because Alice Through the Looking Glass was not directed by Tim Burton.
Yeah, right. It just kind of feels that way.
Right, so it's 8 movies. Those movies are Dark Shadows in 2012, mm-hmm. Sleepy Hollow in 1999, mm-hmm. Edward Scissorhands in 1990,
okay.
Sweeney Todd in 2007, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory 2005, Ed Wood in 94, Corpse Bride in 2005, and Alice in Wonderland in 2010. And speaking of Corpse Bride, now, they were having a bit of an issue running back and forth between the filming of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. They were also filming Corpse Bride at the same time.
Right.
So, yeah, the filming was a bit difficult, made even more complicated with the British... See, what do they call it?
The equity laws.
The British equity rules.
Yeah, right.
They said that children could only work 4.5 hours a day. So what should have taken them 6 weeks to 2-3 months took them 6 months. Yeah. And let's see. I've got a few other things here that are really kind of cool. Oh, the amount of fake chocolate used in the one scene with the chocolate river that Augustus Gloop falls into.
Yeah.
Now, this is not real chocolate. We all know this. It is right. Fake chocolate. It's made to look like chocolate. But guess how many gallons they used on set?
I'm going to go with 8,200.
Whoa! You just, I mean, really, you've been guessing over this whole time. Try 244,994 gallons.
That's way under. What?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Now, the boat.
The unsung heroes of this movie were actually the engineers that allowed the pumps to continually, like, chug whatever that substance is.
Right?
Wow.
Oh, and the shout outs to the movies. Now, 2001 Space Odyssey. That one.
Favorite movie of all time.
Oh, yeah. Classic. But you can definitely see that in the TV room scene.
Yeah, they also spec Seth. Yeah.
Yeah. The theme music. The theme music is played in the background, and the way the gorillas respond to the chocolate bar is directly taken from the first scene of that movie.
Most certainly.
Now, Edward Scissorhands is a little harder to spot. If you remember the flashback of Willy Wonka opening the chocolate factory for the very first time. Mm-hmm. He has this great big pair of scissors, and he cuts the ribbon, and then he turns around and opens his arms wide. Well, the scissors hide his arm. So it looks like he has one arm, and then scissors for his other arm.
God.
That is a direct nod to Edward Scissorhands. According to Tim Burton.
Yes, no, it was not an accident.
Absolutely not. And I mean, there's just a whole bunch of little stuff like that. Now, the gates, those huge cast iron gates that they open, you know, when they let the kids in and everything, those were actually offered to the Roald Dahl Museum. And that is located in Great Misden. However, because of their humongous size and weight, they had to decline. So,
yeah, it was too big a gift.
So, Warner Brothers, in an act of charity that I have never heard of from them, and maybe this is why, because they tend to keep that kind of stuff quiet. But I have a whole new respect for Warner Brothers. They
absolutely
went and had smaller, lighter replicas made to give to the museum because they couldn't take the real ones.
On their own dime.
Yep, on their own dime.
Pardon me, on their own shilling.
Yes, absolutely. They did. They paid. I mean, they paid for it all. They took care of it and donated the replicas to the museum.
You know, as they should.
Absolutely, but you don't hear about big companies, especially Warner Brothers, doing stuff like that.
Well, I'm kind of partial to Warner Brothers anyway. I like to think that they're a better production company. I'm sure they're just like Warner
Well,
Brothers,
if they bow down, kiss Johnny's ass, and forgive, beg his forgiveness for being such a bastard to him, then I might consider liking Warner Brothers. Right now, Warner Brothers, Disney, pretty much all film companies are kind of on my shit side right now. So,
well, you know, this however, kind of would put us back to kind of square one with the trial stuff.
Right.
The accusation stuff. I think maybe they jumped the gun.
Oh, most definitely they jumped the gun.
Yeah, and that was probably a separate, you you know, maybe a PR or an HR department in Warner Brothers that had nothing to do with these kind of people that were like, listen, we're going to scale this down and send it to you for free. You know.
Well, but they had to get the okay of the big guys.
Yeah, sure. But like you said, this is like 2005.
Yep.
We're in this age.
Yeah, that was much, much before he even met the thing. So.
Yeah. And this is before Facebook got huge and YouTube got huge and public opinion will immediately dictate how this company should feel and take a stand.
However, I have to say, Jason Momoa has withdrawn his support from Amber Heard. Not withdrawn so much as kind of bowed to public opinion, I guess.
Well, he's certainly not supporting her.
Well, he is, but he's also supporting Depp.
Please explain.
It's six of one, half dozen of the other.
Okay. So he's taking... Basically, he's taking the split.
He's taking Switzerland's position. Absolutely neutral. However, he has said that he will not stick up for her or demand her presence again if they decide to make any more Aquaman movies. Because the last one turned out so horribly. I'm so sorry. Yeah, her career is over. And I'm sorry, I'm petty and selfish, and I love Johnny Depp, so all I can say is, yay!
Right.
Sorry, man, I mean, you lie. Snitches get stitches, bitch, you're just lucky your ass ain't in the hospital. You know, you don't lie about somebody and expect to get away with it scot-free, and which she did. You know, she thought she could spin these tales, weave these lies, and would magically just, either Johnny would be quiet, nobody would say anything, and she would get away with it, or, you know, she doctored the photos, which they've proven, and she would get away with it. She never even imagined a situation where they call her out on her bullshit. Welcome to the real world, miss.
Yeah.
Sorry, I really love it.
Well, you know, and getting back to it, in the final analysis, and so you saw the 1971 Willy Wonka.
Oh, yes. That was one of my favorite movies growing up.
Right. And I think we're of that certain generation.
We are.
When you compare the 71 and listen, be as unbiased as you can. When you compare the 1971 to 2005, which one brought you more enjoyment and
That is a difficult question. That's a good question.
It is difficult. And, you know, whenever we talk about... You know, the 2005 film, I'm sorry, but of course you're going to have to compare the 1971. And when you compare both of these to the Dahl novel, I think it's pretty obvious that Tim Burton's was probably
much closer.
A bit more close. Yes. Even though he ended up making up Wilbur Wonka, you know, he made up some stuff too. He did stray also.
Well, yeah, but that's poetic license.
Right. Well, so, which one did you enjoy more? Which one do you revere more, regardless of Johnny Depp and Tim Burton?
You're putting me between a rock and a hard place here, baby. You know what you're doing to me.
And it's tough. And this is what a lot of Depp fans and Burton fans have to kind of face, you know.
All right, I'm going to say this.
Okay.
The Burton Depp movie was much more likely to enrapture the audiences of today. With the whole, you know, just all of the different aspects and the way that they went about it. You know, I can see how that would encapsulate the you know, what the youth of today want to see, need to see, should see. However, me personally, I have to give it up. Gene Wilder, my heart.
Damn, girl.
The cinematography, the but just everything. I mean, it was so dark, and it was, there was a whole lot that I didn't get as a kid in that movie.
Right.
That I now get, and I'm going, whoa, how the hell did they get away with that in 1971?
Yeah, I mean, girls,
really?
You know, it was pretty disturbing.
But it was.
And now, you know, Tim Burton's is also disturbing.
In a different way, though.
Yes.
It is disturbing, but it's more along the lines of how are we raising our children disturbing than it is there are things out there that we can't control disturbing. Which is what the 1971 version gave you.
Wow. Yes. Wow. Quite right.
Yep. You were talking about Burton and Dahl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before he started filming this movie, he decided to pay a visit to Miss Tilly Dahl. I believe. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Lissy Dahl.
Yeah.
Either his daughter or his granddaughter.
Yeah, she was one of the executors of the Dahl estate.
Right, but she lives on site. She lives in the manor house. Well, while he was there, he got to go out to Dahl's writing shed.
Shed.
And as he looked at it and started to walk through the door, he went, my God. It's the Bucketts house. And Lissy says she remembers thinking, thank you, Lord, somebody gets it.
Right.
But yeah, he also got to read some of the original manuscripts. And the original manuscripts were very, very much, much more politically incorrect than the eventually published book. For example, one of the kids was named Herpes.
Mm.
So, yeah, the original manuscripts were just not fit for 1970 or 1960 something.
Mm-hmm.
Consumption. But yeah, so he had to tone it down and you know, kind of, you know, give and take a little to get it published, but published eventually it was. So
yeah.
But yeah.
How are you doing? You're looking better. Right, sir?
Everybody say hi to Kim. Kim, say hi. Kim,
hi.
Say hi.
Hi.
Sorry, guys. We got Grand Central Station going on around here tonight. It's all good. Okay, let's see. Do I have anything else to add to this? Oh, this is the second movie where Johnny deals with melted candy as the basis of the movie. Do you know what the first one was?
Was it Edward Scissorhands?
No, it was not. It was Chocolate.
Oh my god, reeling, reaching into the bowels.
Oh, Chocolat was the best movie ever. Johnny Depp playing a Romany gypsy. Oh, perfect.
Well, between Chocolat and Don Juan DeMarco.
And Chocolat.
You can take even the whitest sorority girl in Southeast, you know, United States.
True.
And like, oh my God. Nuts. Don Juan DeMarco, you know, and that's where like the heartthrob, you know, that's where Johnny had like that spot where it was like, you know what? I'm a creative and also I'm fucking hot.
Yeah, but he doesn't say that. He refuses.
Well, no. He doesn't have to.
Oh, I know, because we all say it for him.
Yeah, well, everybody knows. You know, I mean, it's a statement that, you know, he doesn't have to make.
Oh, okay, one more little thing about the movie, and then we're going to have to wrap this up. We're already way past an hour.
Yeah.
Okay, Willy Wonka's cane, you know when he moves it, it kind of goes click, 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 click. It is filled with Nerds candy.
Oh my God. Are you
I am dead serious. Yes, it is filled with Nerds candy. And the in the gum room where she gets a hold of the three-course meal gum, you see the big vats that are rotating what looks like golf ball-sized balls inside.
Yeah.
That is the actual machines used to make Gobstoppers candy.
What?
Yep.
Oh, what?
Yep. Jawbreakers, Gobstoppers. That is the actual machine.
Still love those.
God, me too. Nerds and Gobstoppers are like my all-time favorite candy.
Yeah, ever. You know, that being said, past the film, past Johnny Depp, Tim Burton, and Roald Dahl, Willy Wonka makes a pretty fantastic product. I'm just saying.
No kidding, right?
Real life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those Gobstoppers actually helped me quit smoking.
Really?
Yeah, well, you put them in there and you've got like the oral fixation, you know, or whatever. And a Gobstopper is like, you know what? You like to smoke? Well, how about working on me for an hour?
Oh, man, do you remember those like fist-sized ones? You can't find those anymore.
Like the ones that don't actually fit? Yeah, right.
Yeah. You got to sit there and like lick them like a lollipop until they shrink down enough to put them in your mouth. Well,
do they even make those anymore?
Because I don't know. I do not know. I have not seen them in many, many years.
This is worse than the Tootsie Pop. You know, how many licks does it take to get to the center? Well, a Gobstopper is like a project.
Oh, no kidding, yeah, right? I know people that would run them under the sink, run them under the running water of the faucet until they shrunk down enough to put them in their mouth.
Right. Yep. If you don't mind my saying, and it's kind of a behind the curtain thing.
Absolutely.
We used to take the regular Gobstoppers, not the Jawbreaker Gobstoppers, but you know.
Yeah, the regular smaller ones.
We would soak them in vodka for like 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks.
Oh yeah, so they got like kind of.
Challenge. And guess what? You're also fucked up. Guess what? The Gobstopper is still beating you. So,
yep. It is still kicking your ass.
And you still can get to the center.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
Listen, on a scale of 1 to 10, and I'm going to finish it out, but I'm just curious because we've talked about this. I'm like, okay, we're going to do Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. What is your personal Jenny scale of 1 to 10 for...
Jenny?
Yeah, Jenny.
A Jenny is a female mule, sweetheart.
It was kind of thought, you know, it was like a cute... It was a cute...
Jenny Finn will work.
What did you? Oh, you want to go there? Oh, what does Jenny Finn think on a scale of 1 to 10 of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I liked it. I thought it was
1 to 10. 1 to 10.
I thought it was amazing. I would have to give it an 8, a solid, solid 8.
Nice.
What about you?
I'm going to go with a 7.25.
All right, reasons?
And it is unfortunate that I saw the 1971 version, and part of that score is because I compared it to the Gene Wilder film.
Right.
Maybe I would have thought that it was better, but in a way it was kind of tainted by that.
Oh, of course. Same here. All right, we are coming close to the end of our time. We're at almost a minute 12. So what we're going to do now is, guys, you know how to reach us, depthheadsandhailstoners@yahoo.com. Come see us on our blog at depthheadshiddlestoners.com. Or you can go the easy way and go to barryreese.net. And click on the link. It'll take you right to our page. Let's see. You can also find us on Facebook in the group Depp Heads and Hiddle Stoners. Instagram, Depp Heads and Hiddle Stoners. And I think that's it. Give us an idea. Let us know. What do you want? What do you want to see? What do you want to hear about? Give us some ideas. We'd love to hear from you. If you've been fortunate enough to meet one of these guys, tell us your story. I'll put it on the air. Just anything. You feel like unloading. You want to talk. You just got bored. Hey, I'm bored all the time. It works for me.
There's also a support group.
There you go.
Absolutely. Let's talk about it.
Most definitely. Right. And as always, shout out to my DeviantArt peeps that do the Tom Hiddleston Loki art and the Johnny Depp art. They are amazing. Go check them out. DeviantArt.com. And my girls and boys who write the stories, go to Wattpad.com. Search Johnny Depp, Tom Hiddleston, Loki, Captain Jack Sparrow, whatever you'd like. It's awesome. These girls are amazing. These guys are amazing. This work is amazing. So anyway, I think that's going to wrap it up. Next week, we have a Hiddleston week. And I'm wondering, what should we do this week?
Yeah, I got a couple, but if anybody else wants to interject, you know.
Well, it's just me here, so. I was thinking because I got the Hollow Crown for Christmas, for my birthday. So I'm thinking maybe we'll do the first disc of the Hollow Crown.
Oh, nice.
The first disc that Tom is in, because he's only in two out of the four.
Right.
So, yeah.
Have we done a critical analysis of the Loki TV series?
We are up to episode 2. We need to do episode 3, so we could do that next week as well. Yeah. Episode 3 has got to be my all-time favorite.
Definitely hitting the stride at 3.
Oh, yeah. Well, the reason being is he actually sings in episode 3.
Right.
And did you know he is a top 10 musical artist? The song that he sang in episode 3 debuted at number 10 on the worldwide digital download.
I would be surprised. B, for God's sakes, please, I hope this defeats that. What was it? Toss a coin for The Witcher? You know, that was kind of... I hated that stuff. I like The Witcher. I love Henry Cavill, but please.
But damn, he's pretty.
A whole lot of, you know, love for throw a coin to The Witcher, but...
Yeah, I get it.
Nothing great. Nothing great.
All right, guys, we are going to sign off. We're at a minute and 15, so you guys stay safe, be cool, keep listening, tune us in. Or actually, I guess you can't say tune us in anymore. Pick us up, and we're going to be on Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Music, anywhere your streaming services allow you to go, we're going to be there. So until next time, we'll see you later.
Love and peace to all of you. Who dat? Who dat nation?
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.